Welcome, everyone, to the Brand Fortress HQ podcast. I'm your host, John Stojan. Today, I'm excited to have Dano Falk on the podcast. And Dano is the founder of Dev Device, where his team specializes in creating tailor-made online marketing strategies. He's a self-taught entrepreneur with decades of experience in online marketing and sold his Amazon business in 2019, has plenty of experience in the Amazon space and beyond. Dano, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Hey-ho. Yeah, thank you for having me, John. It's a new experience, kind of, to me, to be on this side of the podcast, because normally I'm on your side, because as you know, I have two podcasts, actually. And I'm taking notice how you're running the show, man, and I'll be learning from you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, yeah, and I was on your podcast probably about 6 months ago and definitely learned a lot from that experience, and that was fantastic to get a chance to kind of share, you know, my journey on Amazon. So I would definitely encourage listeners to check out that episode if you're interested in kind of, you know, my origin stories, but also to hear, you know, listen to the other amazing people that you've had on your podcast. So for people that are listening that maybe aren't familiar with you, can you give a little bit of background about yourself and kind of, you know, how you got to Amazon?
Sure. Well, it's been a long story. My life after school started as studying jazz saxophone, to give like a starting point. But from there, I ventured into those days. It was called desktop publishing, like in the early 90s. There was this thing where you could like create layouts on a computer and print them. So that was a big thing. And a guy I met at a film set suggested, hey, let's do a desktop publishing company. And that was the start of my clicking time and internet and digital, I would say. I picked up a lot about multimedia from those agencies where I started as an intern. I created my own agency in Munich in 2000. And we were lucky enough to get like really big clients like Siemens and Infineon and EADS and work with them on their interactive media. Then I had in 2009-ish, I started to like the idea of living in Malaysia. So I moved here in 2011, started to live here permanently. At the same time, I visited a webinar or seminar, actually, a conference about like business in general. And there was this thing, this guy on stage saying that you could actually sell on Amazon yourself. I think that was in 2014, and that was new to me. To me, Amazon was a bookstore, and I didn't know like third-party people could just open an account and sell stuff. So I thought, I have all this digital design background. Why not we try this one? So yeah, I started. I opened my private label account. Of course, it was a long journey to learn all the things you need to know to sell on Amazon, build your brand. Import stuff. So I think selling on Amazon kind of involves almost everything. So you have to find a supplier, you have to take care of logistics, of packaging. I don't have to tell you guys like what it's like to sell on Amazon, but it was a long journey. And in 2019, I decided to sell my business, which was another very interesting journey as well. And an experience I recommend every entrepreneur to go through. It's very unique, and you learn a lot when you actually sell your business on one of these online market platforms. And after that, I decided to go back to my agency work because I enjoy helping other businesses to grow, cooperating with humans and with companies. So yeah, this is what I'm doing with my agency Dev Device since then. And today we focus on building strategies, consulting, helping brands to start on Amazon Japan, which is kind of in our neighborhood, not really, but it's one of the things that turned out to be like not very familiar to many Western brands, or there was like a lot of hesitation and a lot of like questions around this like expansion to Amazon Japan, and we helping brands to answer these questions.
Okay. Yeah, and I definitely want to jump into and ask you a lot of questions about Amazon Japan, because I think that's such a unique opportunity for Amazon sellers that really doesn't get a lot of attention. But before we go there, I'm just really curious, you know, you talked a little bit about selling your business, and I think that's one of the things, you know, for any business owner that's listening to this and, you know, Amazon focused brand is one, keeping the end in mind as far as at some point, you know, you're going to either sell your business or you're going to shut down your business. Hopefully you're going to be successful and sell that business. So as someone who's been through that process, you know, you said a couple of interesting things, at least to me, which is, you know, first of all, selling, you know, what made you decide to want to sell or to sell your business in 2019? And what did that process look like at that time, selling on a platform?
It was a very scary decision. But I mean, one of the things I realized that as long as you grow your Amazon business, it's very difficult to take cash out of it, actually. You know, you hit a new sales record in a month and you're very happy. You see all these sales, but at the same time, your inventory is gone. So now you have to order more. And it's kind of this cycle where, you know, whatever you make, you have to kind of reinvest into the next batch of inventory and do the next batch of marketing and stuff. So I found it quite difficult to actually, to keep some money from this. So, and of course, one of the ways is to monetize on this venture is to simply sell it. And that's what I did. And the process was to check out some marketplaces. I mean, I had some personal connections with the guys from Empire Flippers. I joined one of their masterminds in Phuket, which was amazing. It was such a cool event, like, you know, overlooking the ocean in a villa and networking with all these Amazon guys. And so they run one of the most professional marketplaces for online businesses. So they do the vetting. So you can just, you know, talk to them and they will bring your listing onto their platform. And they will also do the, you know, they will check, you know, if what you say is true. So that was one option. And then I also spoke to another agency called Quiet Light Brokerage. And I ended up actually selling through them. So the process is just to find the broker you want to work with. And then there will be like an exclusivity. So when you decide to work with this broker, you have to kind of, yeah, stick with him and you cannot have like multiple things in the oven. You have to really limit yourself to just working with this broker. And then they list it, they talk to their existing clients, and then, you know, you get the first inquiries. You start getting on calls with, potential buyers, which can be really scary because at the back of your head, you're thinking like, well, this guy could be my competitor, you know. So he could be just like digging deep into what's happening in my business. And there's no way, you know, of stopping. I cannot like not tell him like, what are my sales? Who's my manufacturer and all that. So you have to be like completely pants down about your business, which is a very scary experience. But eventually it was okay. So so you go through this a few times, and then as soon as somebody's interested, you sign an LOI, like a letter of intent, and then you go to the next level of sharing all the information and sharing, you know, your sales history and you know how your business works and all that. So when after everything is checked off and you agree on the price, of course, that's one of the biggest issues to actually go to the actual sales process. As soon as the price is agreed upon, then you go to the purchase agreement, and then the takeover starts to happen. So then you start kind of, there's an escrow, you know, the money goes into an escrow account, and then you kind of pass over the business. You give them access to your seller account, which can be really messy, by the way. So, you know, I'm still have some email address stuck in my old seller account, which gives me headache, because as soon as you just want to open a new account, then this one email address, you know, that is linked to you will still kind of put this red flag in Amazon saying, oh, you have another account. So just a heads up on this part. So you have to make sure that you really kind of take out everything personal connected to you when you sell the business, and like let somebody else take over your seller account, which is of course much easier if it's run by an LLC or by an entity, by a company. So then it's then the buyer would take over the company and your personal details are not really involved. But if you're running this as a personal account, especially when you're outside of the US, then you have, and you also need to delete your customer account, like your Amazon buyer account. That's also something that's linked to it. I realized that like all my audiobooks suddenly went missing. I didn't have access anymore to my whole collection of Audible, you know, like $500 worth of books were gone because I didn't take care of it. So yeah, it comes with a few, unexpected consequences. But yeah, if we do it right, then yeah, after some time, you see the money in the bank, and that's kind of a nice experience to have.
Yeah. And I want to double click on, one of the things that you said there, because I think it's so important for a lot of Amazon sellers to recognize, which is a good portion of the value in your business is going to end up in your bank account when you sell it. And up until that point, sometimes it can be really hard to actually, have profit being put into your pocket, as opposed to, like you said, once you start looking at making sure you've got enough inventory, and then taking into account that, if you want to continue to grow, that you need to be launching new products. So that's product development and inventory for new products and, PPC and everything else that's involved, is that, a good portion of your profits from the business are going to come when you essentially at the end, when you cash out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the kind of summary of this, which came to my mind, is when you grow, you're broke. There are definitely exceptions to this rule. But as you mentioned before, all these things that you need to do while you grow, they all cost money, and they easily take up all your profits. So you're always kind of at the edge, with your finances, because everything that's come in needs to be like reinvested. And that's one of the reasons why. And of course, when you cash out, you get like 3 years of profit, at once, which is, can be a very nice amount of money.
Yeah, absolutely. So is there anything, kind of thinking back on that process that surprised you about it, or you kind of talked about the difficulties of switching Amazon accounts, but is there anything that you can think of that you wish you had done differently?
I think not really. I think I did it right, except for the glitches with the leaving behind some of my details and not removing myself from the account. Other than that, I think I did a good job. Yeah.
And for those that are listening, Daniel's patting himself on the back for that.
Yeah. Who else is gonna do that?
True. Very true. Okay. So I think that's a good transition, because you talk about selling the brand, but I think it transitions really well into one of the topics that we were kind of discussing before we hit record here, which is talk about brand identity and, both on and off Amazon. What are you seeing now with the brands that you're working with as far as having to develop that brand identity?
That's a good question. And of course, if you want to increase your business value, there are a lot of moving parts in this. Of course, it's a progression of your profits and how automated your business is. But then, of course, to be present off Amazon, I think, is one very essential part of it. And not only if you want to sell your business, but also if you want to grow it and grow your brand. And if you don't want to be in the cheap category, which I personally would not recommend to anyone, to be the cheapest guy on page one. I would rather be, the best guy on page one. And for that, we need more than a listing, because Amazon is not a branding platform. It's just a selling platform. And the first thing that you see on Amazon is price and reviews. So if you want to sell at a higher price, if you want to sell premium product, then the off Amazon presence becomes super essential. So people, before they spend double of what the cheapest guy is asking, they would like to know who you are, and then they will look you up on Google, and then what shows up on Google better, be solid and legit. So that's why the off Amazon presence is so. I mean, I just did a study for a client yesterday, and one of the ways I do that, I simply collect five competitors. I just put their ASINs into Google and see how many search results come up. Of course, including, you know, my client's ASIN, and see, like, it's very simple. You know, Google will tell you how many times this ASIN has been, you know, shows up in any online platform or any website. And it can be quite amazing, you know, when you see, like, if one ASIN is showing up 3 times and the other one is showing up 400 times, it gives you a very good clue about, like, what these guys are doing off Amazon. And more often than not, the guys who are showing up 400 times also have, like, a significant higher amount of sales and rankings on Amazon. So, yeah, so to do stuff not just with your brand website, but also to cooperate with affiliate partners with news websites, with blogs. I remember having, like, the biggest sales day ever I had when I was selling on Amazon came actually from a magazine, from an online magazine, which picked up a press release that I submitted. So this is one of our services, by the way, is submitting press releases, which go out to news websites. And these guys, they saw this press release. They kind of took note of some unique features of my product. And then they wrote an article about this product and linked to Amazon. And suddenly my sales went from, I don't know, from 10 units per day to 100. So that was one example, like, how off Amazon presence can make a big difference. And in the long run, I think no one can kind of go around this. I think we need the off Amazon presence. And the second option of that is, of course, to expand to other Amazon marketplaces, and which we have, I don't know how many have, do we have now, 24 or something? Like, yeah, there's a lot like of, yeah, and well, just, you know, take, yeah.
Yeah, so before we dive into that, let's, I want to ask some questions about this, because that is the theme that I'm hearing over and over again as, you know, Amazon matures, is that it means that in order to compete, you really have to have a very cohesive and strong brand. The days of just, you know, going to Alibaba and finding a product and buying it from Alibaba and selling it on Amazon are pretty much over. Along with the days of, hey, I'm going to take, you know, find a product based on keyword research on Amazon, then I'll find an Alibaba and I'll add, you know, one little feature to it, and then, you know, sell that on Amazon. That is becoming a much more difficult route. And really the people that are, you know, still seeing strong success on Amazon have this kind of, you know, whole brand concept that includes on Amazon, but also, like you said, off Amazon. So for, you know, the sellers that are listening to this, and, you know, maybe the folks that even have, you know, some of those off Amazon branding pieces, what recommendations would you give as starting places for building that brand to be, you know, more of a traditional brand than just somebody who's selling a collection of products on Amazon?
Yeah, I mean, your own brand website is the obvious starting point, which nobody should miss. So you should have a really well-built website, and ideally combined with an online store where people can choose if they want to buy from you on your web store or if they want to go to Amazon, or you can have both. You know, you can have like a different domains. One is just about your brand, and then you can have an e-com store. So that is definitely like the cornerstone of your Amazon presence, and no serious brand will ever miss out on that. And the second layer is, of course, how you cooperate. How do you network? How do you create like meaningful connections and relationships with people, with like joint venture kind of thing? Yeah. So, you know, if you selling dog leashes and you can find a guy who's selling dog food, and you can kind of like support each other's products, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, if you're catering to the same audience and providing different products, I mean, this is where I would look for cooperation opportunities and to engage and reach out to people, you know, who are kind of catering to the same audience, and then create corporations. I mean, you can put inserts into your packages and also promoting like other people's products. Or you can, of course, cross promote on your websites. You can, you know, you can do YouTube videos. You can, of course, work with influencers. TikTok has become a big thing now. I mean, I just attended a webinar yesterday. The TikTok shop the topic is something nobody should ignore at the moment. But eventually it's all about networking to me. It's all about, you know, building your presence on many different websites and magazines and blogs out there. I mean, there's Reddit, there's all, I mean, I don't have to list them down. You can, but to be present like multiple times, like ideally hundreds of times when I look for your essence and it shows up like 100 over times in Google, I think that's when we have done a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things I just want to point out there, because I feel like there's a huge opportunity that gets missed a lot, which is the joint ventures that you mentioned. And I feel like Amazon is such a unique place where, because you can see somebody's brand and product, you can very easily find, you know, complementary businesses to your own. Like you said, using the example of the dog food and the dog leash. And the nice thing is that now that Amazon, well, I think it's been there for about a year now, has a requirement to where every business has to have, you know, their official business name, and they have to have an address and those types of things. It's actually easier than ever in order to actually figure out who's selling that product. So, you know, even if you can't find the brand name because maybe they haven't gotten as far as, you know, what you're suggesting, they don't have that website yet. You can still find their seller name. And usually in a lot of those cases, you can find some contact information. And like you said, you know, reaching out to brands that are on your level, they're already, you know, they might be selling 1,000 units a month on a very small scale. And even at that, that's, you know, 1,000 customers that are the same customers that you have. And so, you know, you can benefit your business a lot. You can benefit their business. And you know, ultimately, the customers that you have in common by working together. And there's, you know, a million different ways that can be done and different promotions you can do with that. Are there any promotions or anything that you can think of off the top of your head where you've seen that joint venture done well recently?
The one that I mentioned to have content posted in a magazine that has decent traction was one of my best experiences. The other ones is just creating content together. So you know, swapping content. So I write the blog post for you. You write the blog post for me. So, you know, you're on your dog food sites. Now people can read about, you know, the special dog leash and the other way around. So this content swap to me is one of the most important parts. And of course, if it can happen in video form, it's even more effective. You know, what we're doing here right now is a kind of a content swap. You know, I do a podcast with you, you do a podcast with me, you know, so, you know, of course we have to be creative depending on the niche and the product, but yeah, to kind of support each other's content, I think is the name of the game, and what precisely the content is and what's the format. So that of course depends on what we have available. Now the two of us have both podcasts available. So, you know, we can do that. If we just have websites or YouTube channels or, you know, or Instagram or whatever, then we would use those channels to swap content. But I think that's basically what it is. And Amazon tells you, you know, frequently bought together, you know, it's as easy as it gets, you know, if you just check those out.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, within Amazon, there's a ton of opportunities there. But then even, you know, if you have your own customer list too of...
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, that's a big one. Yeah, good you mentioned that. Yeah, exactly. See that? Yeah. So, yeah, thanks for mentioning. I mean, that is also, I cannot stress enough how important it is to have your own email list and your own customer list. I mean, yeah, that is a really, really important part. And of course, as soon as you have an email list, yeah, you can send an email like promoting your business, your joint venture partner, and the other way around. That also can be very massive.
Yeah. And especially with how much, and I think this segues really well into the external traffic conversation. You know, we all know that Amazon absolutely loves external traffic when we look at ranking. and giving more visibility to products. So how do you, I think external traffic has become one of those kind of buzzwords, like optimize your listing, where it is really important, but sometimes people have used it where it's just a kind of a generic term, but it's super important when you get into the details. So how do you think about using external traffic effectively, and what strategies have you seen work well?
So one that worked well for us and is press releases. They can make a big difference. There is a lot of like chance, and it can be a bit random, like how much traffic exactly comes from these press releases. But this can be a significant source of traffic, and they are like forever. Yeah? So when we publish a press release about a brand, including the the ASIN URL, it goes out to 400 news sites, and this article will be there for years. So, it's going to be an ongoing traffic source for people who search for these long-term, keywords, which we include. That's one. Then, of course, as we just mentioned, the email blast, if you have a partner with a big email list, then they can send a link to your listing from that list. That's huge. Beyond that, of course, we have the classic ways of running Facebook ads, which I would also do in a humble way. I wouldn't expect, to make a profit from running Facebook ads to my listing, but it still can help, with external traffic as well as Google ads. So, the classic platforms running a little bit of paid advertising, which brings people to my listing. These would be like the basic four channels I would start with, and then of course we can get creative about YouTube and whatever else is happening in our niche.
Okay, yeah, and I think something that's related really closely to this that I have in our notes as well is talking about building and engaging that audience. So I've seen a number of different brands that I've worked with that have done really well at, developing a good process to collect email addresses from their customers to get them on a list. And then what happens from there is they never email them. So they get, nothing
that's,
from that.
That's one of my favorite ones. Yeah. So exactly, I guess, yes.
Before we get to kind of my pet peeves with it, maybe... again, this is one of those kind of cliches, is like build and engage your audience. Well, talk to me a little bit about, from your perspective, what do you see work really well in order to build that audience? And then maybe we can talk a little bit about, engagement and what you're seeing work well.
Building your audience, the obvious route for an Amazon brand or for somebody who's only selling on Amazon for now is to have some kind of inserts. The value proposition of we extend a lifetime warranty for your product, I don't think that's working anymore so well. I think it used to some point in time. But, these days we just have to... we have to include an offer that that is just too good to not be taken upon. So we have to include some like a QR code, some kind of coupon, some kind of several propositions of value before people actually sign in and leave their email address to join your list. Another great way to build your list, of course, is you have an online store. So then, there is no questions asked about whether people leave the email address or not. So as soon as you sell something on your e-com store, which is another huge reason to have one, is that, you're building your list automatically. So there's no question about if you get the email address or not. And then, of course, there would be other lead generation sources. It really depends on your kind of product. Is it B2B, B2C? It's more rare to have B2B products on Amazon, but you can still reach out to your potential audience. And one of the systems that we have is actually you can capture your website visitors' email addresses and names. So that's another system. We call it the VLC, the Visitor Leads Conversion System. So if you have a website, an online store, And as we know, 2% of them convert into customers or subscribers, but we can capture around 15%. So you can kind of 7x your conversion rate in terms of lead generation from your existing e-commerce store and build your email list pretty fast.
How does that, so the technology behind it makes sense as far as, you know, cookies and identifying people, and the reality of it is our, you know, I know my email address is out there in a number of different places, so I get email from all kinds of people, and that's just, you know, kind of the world we live in. But what does that look like? What is an effective approach with somebody who maybe visited your website? You're able to have, you know, the data and the background through the system you talked about in order to email them. What does that warm-up sequence look like? Because I got to imagine customers kind of out of the blue, if they didn't give their email, might be a little bit alarmed if they get an email from a company that they didn't necessarily provide the email to.
Yeah, of course, we have to be super polite and super slow with our, I mean, slow in terms of not aggressive. But the sequence normally looks like that, that we send the first email within the first 10, 15 minutes. And people are surprised, and most of the time in a good way, that, you know, we say, hey, you visited our website. And, you know, you saw, you showed interest in this and that. And then we just provide a bit more of information and maybe a special coupon for people who are looking around, who want to buy a dog leash. And, you know, we just like took note, our system took note that you, you know, want to buy a dog leash. So here is a special promo code. So this is normally the first email we would send. And then after that, we do like a bit of a brand introduction. So the next emails would be more about, you know, what is behind the brand? Why is this brand trustworthy? What is the brand story? We send pictures of the founders, stuff like that. And then so it's basically like a five-step email sequence where we do a mix of introduction, of connection building, and sending some special offers. And more often, I mean, of course, people can unsubscribe. So if they're not comfortable, they can always unsubscribe. But more often than not, we see that people actually appreciate this. And I mean, they're looking for our product. And of course, you know, they're looking at other websites. But if you are the one who stands out because he follows up and gives them like a special offer, they see that as an opportunity, as a value, more than something that they are, you know, uncomfortable with.
Okay. And what is the range of open rates and click-through rates look like for those, that email campaign?
Well, that's a very big variety, man. It really depends on the brand, on the offer, on, you know, on the type of audience. But we see open rates in anywhere between like 20% and 60%. So so there's a lot of there's a big variety of how big it is in a particular, for a particular client. But we do see you know, something, you know, between 20-60% like that.
Okay, which, I mean, from my understanding, seems like it's pretty in line with what you would see from your regular email list.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it is more or less, it has the same engagement, basically, like a normal newsletter, I would say. It's not much different.
Okay. Yeah, and I think, you know, especially if you've got, what I really like about what you described in that sequence is it's not just sell, sell, sell. Because, I mean, yeah, obviously customers are there because they're researching some sort of product and interested in buying something. However, you know, I think having that, telling the brand story behind it, is really powerful. So people can really understand and connect with why the brand exists, what, you know, who it's designed to serve, and is able to really tell their story, as opposed to, you know, just putting up an ad, where there's not really, there's pretty limited context that you can provide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very neat. Well, the next thing that I kind of wanted to wait till the end, but I did want to make sure that we covered it, which is selling in Japan. So, you know, obviously Amazon US is still the by far the biggest marketplace. And we hear a lot about expanding into Europe, and even, you know, a little bit into the Middle East, but Japan seems like one of those areas that is fairly new to the Amazon process. So tell me about selling in Japan.
Yeah, surprisingly so. It's kind of new to many people. Well, it's the market size of Japan is around 10% of the U.S., and but it is the fourth biggest marketplace, and most people don't believe it, or at least are very surprised to hear that Japan is actually the fourth biggest marketplace and not Brazil or, you know, or Italy or whatever. So it goes like that. It's U.S., U.K., Germany, and Japan. Isn't that funny? Yeah. So Japan, it has a very reasonable size. There's a big affinity to online shopping, to Western brands. There's a big affinity to China. So if your products come from China, I mean, you obviously save like a lot in terms of shipping time and cost. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to sell in Japan, but of course there's also a lot of obstacles, which the biggest one is the culture, of course. So, you know, Japanese is not just a different language. It's a compound of like three different scripts mixed with English in between. Sometimes when it goes, you know, when people describe Western products. So it's quite a jungle to navigate, and Google Translate is not really do the job, you know, to translate your listings. So you have to understand a lot of things about Japanese culture. You have to know that Japan consists of 98% of Japanese. So it's a very how you say this in English?
Homogenic. Yeah, there you go.
Homogenous.
I even said it wrong. Homogenous. There we go.
Homogenous. Yeah. See, I'm a German who still learns English here. Thanks. Yeah. So, you know, 98% of people have the same nationality. I mean, if you look at the US, the biggest nationality portion is 30%, which is Germans. Again, surprisingly so. So that's one. And of course, there are import regulations. So they are super particular about anything that's food related. So even if you are selling spatulas, you know, they have to go through a lab test because they would touch somebody's food. So there's this part to be aware of. And then, of course, you have to register your brand, your trademark in Japan, because you cannot just carry over, you know, like your USPTO registration. You have to register your trademark at a place called Platpat. I know it's
what a good name to it.
it's easy to remember. You just go to Platpat and, you know, register your trademarks. There are a few things you have to a few loops, and then you have to find a partner on the ground who would be your importer. So somebody who would handle like your customs clearance, who would receive your goods and send them to Amazon. But yeah, we have all that taken care of, so we can help with all of that. Then you have to create your listings, and there are two ways about that. So you can simply import your US ASIN, for example, and carry over all your existing reviews, which has the big upside of you're starting, you know, with, I don't know, 100, 200 reviews with a new listing in Japan, which of course is great. On the downside, you have to deal with this localization of your images, which is supposedly easy, but to actually make it work, it has some very unexpected results. So Seller Central is working very funny in many ways. When you submit an image, then it just gets rejected because suddenly it's another seller who's in control of the listing. Or then it shows up in the US and suddenly you have like a Japanese listing showing up in your US marketplace. So there are some unexpected consequences of this, but still, I mean, it makes sense, of course, to do this when you have a significant amount of good reviews in another marketplace. You can just carry over the listing and kind of localize the images, and there you go. And the other way, of course, is just to start a new listing in Japan and get some Vine reviews and get started with and be in full control of that Japanese listing. That is all doable. The challenge, again, as I mentioned, get certified, like deal with the cultural barrier. Of course, we have to do our research first. I mean, I would not recommend to just go and, you know, and start in Japan without doing like a proper marketplace research, which we also can help with. So we have to understand like how many units are being sold at what price, what is the competition. So we just, you know, need to set the expectations right before we invest in this process, which is, can come with a bit of investment and can take quite some time to make it all work and to put it all together. But then again, it can be something very, helpful to expand, to grow the value of your business, to grow your global presence as a brand. Some brands are really taking off and Japanese people love their products. So it can be, you could end up selling much more than 10% of what you're selling in the US if it's a good product market fit.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine, the competition in the United States is very intense, whereas, like you said, with those barriers in Japan, I would imagine that the competition you see is a lot less than what we encounter in the U.S. marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My friend Gary Huang brought up an example recently. Let me try to get it straight. He said, what was it? I think yoga pants or some really, really popular product. They had, 23,000 reviews, 4.6 star in the US. And the top selling product in the same category in Japan had 260 reviews and 3.8 rating. So, this kind of gives you an idea how different the competition can be. So you're not competing against the guy who has 20,000 reviews, but with someone who has 200 reviews, which can be much easier to compete in Japan.
So are there categories of products that you see or that you would, from what you've seen, that work really, really well selling in Japan?
I would say gaming related stuff can be quite big because Japanese people, they really like gaming. Beauty products, beauty brands which manage to get all the certifications and they manage to appeal to Japanese audience, they can also be very successful. It's Japanese people have this they like sophisticated stuff, and you can get their attention and you can get sell for much higher prices when you sell something really special in a certain niche. So I think there is a big opportunity to cater to people with high quality demands who are willing to spend more. It's a variety of niches. And beauty, electronics for gaming specifically. And then things that are related to ceremonies and to cooking. So I think there's a lot of potential in there.
Okay. So with that said, if we look at the flip side, you talked a little bit about, some of the different regulations on products, specifically, a spatula needs to have some additional testing that it probably wouldn't have to have in the United States. Are there certain categories that you find to be extremely challenging when you look at the Japanese marketplace and trying to get that, imported and ready for sale on Amazon?
I wouldn't say extremely challenging, but I think the biggest challenge is supplements, beauty products. These are the ones that need a lot of testing and where the testing process can take months. A spatula will obviously move faster because you don't have to go into the ingredients of it. It just has to prove that it's kind of clean. So everything people ingest, like supplements and put on their skin, those take the longest to get approved. Yeah.
Okay. And do you see what are your recommendations around certain business sizes for brands? At what point expanding in Japan, maybe if they're in the US, they're currently selling in the US marketplace and they're I'm thinking about expanding. Is there a certain you know, kind of threshold or size where you see it being, you know, really an advantage of launching in Japan?
I would say as soon as you are at the point with your, let's say, US business where you're ready and you have the resources to expand to a new marketplace, you know, which could be your e-com store or a different country, as soon as you're ready to do that, I think Japan should be on your list. And of course, it's different for every brand. You know, when are they ready to expand? Are they still like kind of trying to make ends meet, or do they have like a solid amount of sales and some profit going on? So they have some resources, you know, to expand. I mean, that's a given. But as soon as you are ready to expand, and every business owner will know when that's the time, then I think you should consider Amazon Japan to be on your list. And the things you should check on are, like I mentioned before, like do your products come from China, for example? That would be a big plus to go there. If your products don't need certification, that would be another big bonus. It could be a no-brainer, you know, if you're in this category where you don't need the certification, where you're shipping from China. That's where I would definitely start selling in Japan. If that's not the case, then I would just do more research and do like proper marketplace research before I make a decision.
Okay. Well, and you talked about, you know, the big advantage, or at least the opportunity for selling in Japan and it being, you know, the fourth largest marketplace, which I think if you talk to the vast majority of Amazon sellers in the United States, I don't think that most would guess that Japan is that large of a marketplace. What else do you think that maybe that we haven't talked about so far? Is there anything else that you think that's really important that sellers know about before they consider selling in Japan?
I think one thing I haven't mentioned is external traffic. So that one can be another challenge in Japan, because the normal things that we kind of a no-brainer to have for a Western brand, like for example their own brand website, it doesn't come as easy, because we have to do it in Japanese. That's number one. Then the social media traffic, and of course, I mean the press release, the ones that we use, we cannot use them for Japan because, you know, they are in English, and our network of news platforms is in English. So there's a lot of things that you suddenly, you know, that kind of you cannot do. Facebook ads, for example. Facebook is one of the least popular channels in Japan. They're all crazy about this thing called LINE, which Western people haven't even heard of.
I'm not even familiar with it.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to run your Facebook ads, and you realize that there's no one there on Facebook. I mean, not that bad, but it's considered to be like a very niche channel, Facebook. It still exists, but even then, you know, your ads have to be in Japanese and all that. The whole online media landscape works a bit differently in Japan. So to expand your brand beyond Amazon in Japan can be another set of challenges, which again can be handled, but don't expect it to be the same as in UK, for example.
Okay. So we've covered a lot talking about Japan, brand building, engaging audiences, all those types of things. Is there maybe, you know, one action item that you would leave listeners with that you think that they should consider looking at first before they dive into, you know, maybe some of the other topics that we've talked about today?
Another action item. Well, to me, there are all these business action items, but I'm also a big believer in mindset and how, you know, how we live our lives. And if I had to bring up the next most relevant action item, I think it would be about how we think and how we structure our day and how we think about our business. I think that would be, could be much more relevant than any of the other techniques that I have mentioned just now. So I think to sit down in the morning and to have this, you know, vision of where this business should be going, how we want to feel about it, and what we can imagine in, you know, in our future. I think that would be the next action item on my list. And it might be even more important than the other ones I mentioned, to have, you know, to get our mindset straight, to get this, to be in the right state to run our day and to do our daily tasks. I think that is a very important thing to consider as an entrepreneur, especially because we are in charge. You know, it's about us. It's about how we do things, how we think about things most of all, and how we feel about things. That makes all the difference. And so this should be definitely in our list of things to take care of.
Okay.
But
I like that answer.
The details of that. Yeah. But the details of this would cover like another 5 webinars. So this I just to mention it.
Okay. Well, and I know that, you know, everybody kind of has their own approach to that, but I think, you know, just having that perspective of, you know, rather than diving into this tactical strategy on Amazon or external traffic or the other things we've talked about, of having that intention and having a vision for what it is you want to build. Like you said, especially as an entrepreneur, where we're given this unique gift where we get to create a good portion of our world, and, you know, we get to choose what that looks like, and making sure that we're choosing what we really want as opposed to what we think that we should have, or think that or other people think that how we should do things, and everything that's kind of wrapped up in that. So, you know, that's a fantastic thing for me personally to think about. And I think for a lot of our listeners too, as they think about the vision for their business. So with that said, folks that want to learn more about you, Dano, or interested in expanding into Japan or any of the other things that we've talked about, where can they learn more about you?
Well, there's a website called danofalk.com. That's the easiest one to remember, I guess. It's simply myname.com. So this is my personal website where I kind of mention like most things that are important to me. Of course, including my business, devdevice.com is my agency, and you can easily find my agency website as well. My best email is dano@devdevice.com or dano@danofalk.com. So there are many .coms you can use for my name. there's a podcast. I have a DJ website as well. I think dano@devdevice.com as an email would work best, and then the URL danofalk.com.
Okay. Yeah, and we'll make sure to put some of those into the show notes, so that way people can find them easily as well. Well, Dano, thank you so much for being on the podcast and walking us through everything from, you know, brand identity to engaging audiences to selling on Amazon Japan. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thanks, man.
Thanks for tuning into the Brand Fortress HQ podcast. If you haven't already, hit the subscribe button and be the first to get new episodes every Tuesday and Thursday, where we'll continue to bring you the most actionable insights and strategies for fortifying your brand on Amazon and beyond. If you haven't already, please leave a rating and review. It helps the show grow, which means we can keep bringing you the best of the best each and every week. Finally, get access to our free after-purchase funnel blueprint using the link in the show notes. This full course will transform your Amazon game by showing you how to build and properly utilize a powerful customer list.